To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark. Rolled up to my
Chevrolet. I climbed down. Well, good morning, everybody.
4 minutes after the hour of, let me get the buttons all situated here. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is, what's your name again?
Renee Salem.
Renee, good morning to you.
Hello.
Good morning. So what have you been doing all morning long?
Running errands.
Running errands. Did you get my horse treats?
I got your horse treats. Okay. We're all set
with
that.
Are they apple?
Yes, they are.
Green apple or red apple?
I have no idea. I'm sure it's a mixture. But they'll be happy because we haven't had any for a while.
Yep. Folks, we have horses in our property in Tempe, and we have lots of mothers and kids stop by.
Yes.
Lots of. And they're enamored by the horses. And we have a miniature donkey named Burita.
Uh-huh.
And if you stand there long enough with your treats, the carrots or whatever, she'll bray for you. And when she brays, you can hear it. A long ways away.
Yep. So she brays when you'll pull up. She knows that she's going to get a treat from you.
So just the other day we got home, and there was a nice lady with two or three kids.
Two little kids.
And so we had them. We said, come on over here to this fence, and the horses came over to the fence, and the kids pet them. And that lady had told me her father was a rancher in Montana or Idaho or something like that. So I said, well, here I am trying to tell you how to feed horses. And you were raised around horses, and she smiled. She was nice to me.
Yeah.
I probably should ask people, do you know anything about horses before I start teaching them about?
Exactly.
You know. So it's okay.
Just the way you are, though.
You're starting off on the wrong foot. Remember, I pushed the buttons over here on this thing. I could just cut you right off.
And every time I hear that automotive mayhem, you and mayhem go together.
I've heard that before. And I've said to you before many times, life is a two-lane road. Walking down the center line like you do, your mother does.
Yes.
Is boring. You want to
not really.
You want to swerve and hit the curb on the left, and swerve and hit the curb on the right. Now, your father, on the other hand, was a lot like me, or I'm a lot like your dad.
I don't know. I think you're a little worse.
Perhaps. But actually, our anniversary's coming up, 43 years.
Yes.
And I'll tell you right now, folks, she was about 10 when I married her.
I was going to say, how come you keep reminding people that it sounds really long?
Well, we got married when you were 10,
years.
So, you know, it's okay.
Okay.
That's why I say that, you know, it just makes it a little easier to understand. But we've been married 43 years now. We're proud of that.
Yes, many of our friends are anymore.
Yeah, well, we had dinner last night with a bunch of people, and I think we were the oldest married group of the group. So, no, most of my friends say, you put up with her for 43 years? And I say, yeah, it's not been that tough. It was a little tough in the early stages, but it was a little easier.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what they say.
This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by my friends at S&S Tire Auto Service. They have three locations in the West Valley, Peoria, Sunrise, and Goodyear. They offer a complete and comprehensive line of tires and many different brands of each size of tires. So if you stop in, they'll look at what you've got, and they'll give you like a good, better, best price for the tires. That's an out-the-door price. It's got all the taxes, the FET, the mounting and the balancing. All that stuff is in. So if you want to stop by with your personal vehicles, that's fine. But they also have farm equipment, golf equipment, lawn and garden equipment, ATVs, trailers, commercial and construction tires. So no matter what your tire needs are, S&S will handle them. And like I say, they balance your tires, they do alignments, they do suspension work, and everything in relationship with tires. And what's nice about S&S is they have the ability to take your old tires off. Therefore, they get to look at the wear pattern on the fronts and on the back.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, they can then decide what needs to be done. The worst case for us in the independent market is the customer goes and has new tires put on, and then they come to us and want us to fix a problem with the old tires, but we never got to see the old tires.
Right. Or they want an alignment, and maybe that's not even what it is.
Yeah, and that's the hard part, too. That's more men than women, by far. Women will tell us it pulls left or pulls right. The guys come in and tell us they want us to align it. They're hardly ever right. So I'll tell you a story. Just the other day, a really nice guy called me about a 77 Pontiac, and it was running hot. And so we discussed flow from the water pump, and we discussed temperature difference between the top of the radiator and the bottom of the radiator. We talked about touching the heater hoses to see if they're both, and touching the upper hose and the lower hose and so forth and so on. And so we beat all the way around that bush. And no matter what, the upper hose was scalding hot. The temperature on the gauge was 3/4 and higher, and he was out of his comfort zone. And we had discussed thermostat I don't know how many times. So finally I wrote him back and I says, look, fixing your car through your eyes isn't working. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to make one last effort. And he had a new water pump, a new thermostat, a new hoses, a new radiator, all that stuff. I said, I want you to take the thermostat completely out and go drive it. And his whole thing was, is there's no flow through the upper hose. Now, it's important to know that the motor, that's how the flow goes. It's from the upper hose into the radiator. Gravity feeds the hot water down. And during the time it goes down, it dissipates its heat. So then the lower hose sucks it back into the engine.
And it should be cool.
Cooler. It's cooler, yes. There are some exceptions on the newer model cars, but for all intents and purposes, that's 95, 98% of the cars. So I said, just take the thermostat out. Why? Just take the thermostat out. So he calls me back or writes me back and he goes, that's it. It's got flow. I can feel the flow. Everything's fine. It runs about 190, blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, well, you had the thermostat upside down. No, no, I couldn't have. No, you did. That's all there is to it. And real nice. I mean, yeah. Very nice guy. And I says, I can't tell you which way it goes in because I can't visualize your 77 Pontiac. The fact of the matter is, and then he said, well, how do I put it back in? What's the answer?
The opposite way of the way it was.
That's exactly right. It's the opposite way it was.
Yeah.
So on the thermostat, you have this little round barrel on one end, and then you have this hoop on the other end. So I said, however it was, and flip it around. That's mm-hmm. all. Just flip it around. Well, I was always taught, just flip it around. Yeah. So it's hard, you know as well as anybody, I get lots and lots of emails mm-hmm. About fixing cars and where do I take it and all that kind of stuff. But fixing a car over the internet through their eyes is tough. But if they'll bear with me, I can usually get doggone close to the issue.
Right.
I can tell them where I... Merv, an engineer, called me not too long ago. And, well, he was working on number 6 cylinder on a misfire. So he had a new plug put in and a new wire put in and some other stuff. And then he found moisture. And I said to him, well, the moisture has to come from the cooling system. So that has to be the intake runner. So he pulled the intake manifold's two pieces, upper plenum and then the lower piece. And I said, you have to pull the upper. And he goes, well, I already pulled the upper. And that's where I saw the water in number 6. And I said, well, that's the misfire code. So that identifies that that's where it's happening. Now you have to pull the lower portion and replace the gasket. Are you sure? Yeah, I'm sure. We do that ourselves a lot. I said, if you want to bring it over here, I'll do it. He goes, well, I'd have to put the plenum back on. And I said, what? And I'm kind of shortening up the conversation. Mm-hmm. So then he called back and he goes, it seems to be fine. And I said, okay, well, watch your water on your reservoir. And we don't want to lose any water there. So it goes up when it's hot and it goes down when it's cold. He said, okay, then he writes me back and he goes, well, there's been a bigger fluctuation of water than it used to be, but I found that the reservoir was cracked, so he fixed it. And okay. So now we should be fine. So then he has the check engine light on, and I said, go in the internet and Google drive cycle. Now, a drive cycle is the computer is programmed to see certain things before it knows that the check engine light should be turned off.
Okay.
Now, when you go a drive cycle, I'm exaggerating this.
Okay.
But I'm going to tell you. You have to start the car and let it idle for 5 minutes. Then you have to put it in drive and drive 25 miles an hour for 38 minutes. Then you have to wave a dead chicken around your head and honk the horn twice. Then you have to go fast on the highway for 11 and a half minutes and then stop. Well, it takes someone to read. And then you have to do it. And if you have to maintain 25 miles an hour for 10 minutes, where are you going to do that?
Yeah, yeah.
So are you going to get out on some country road at go 25 when the speed limit's 55 and people are parked in your trunk? I mean, the whole thing.
Parked in your trunk.
Well, you're going for 25 and everybody's,
trying
to get around you. So the whole issue of the drive cycle is I said, hey, Merv, you've got to go through this drive cycle before the computer goes, okay, problem solved. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that takes 100 or more miles in order for you to hit all the buttons.
Right.
So there might be 10 glasses, and each one is a crazy stupid thing. Mm-hmm. So would you look up drive cycle for me?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I was trying. I thought I heard your phone ring, so I was trying to see if it was on silent.
It is on silent.
Okay.
I already did that.
Okay.
Because, you know, I have a lot of friends that take joy in hearing the phone ring on the radio, and then they have bad words to say, and a lot of them are your friends.
Oh, no, they're not.
Oh, yes, they are.
I don't have any bad friends.
602-508-0960. If you have a car questions, now's the time to get in, because the lines are always open right now. 602-508-0960. And there's two of us here. And the drive cycle here. While the drive cycle test is going, the engine's computer runs a little test or readiness monitors to see if the emission system is working. Now, this really is not just the emission system. Here are the step-by-step instructions on how to perform a basic but very effective drive cycle.
2 minutes.
Okay. And here is what it says. Have the fuel tank between 30 and 70% full.
Wow.
How
okay.
crazy is that?
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, the vehicle must also have a good alternator and a strong battery. Holy mackerel. Then it says, the vehicle must sit overnight for at least 8 hours in an environment that is less than 90 Fahrenheit. And the engine temperature needs to match the air temperature first thing in the morning, which means you have to sit at 8 hours.
Right.
So the engine in Payson, it's 28, and mm-hmm. the outside temperature is 28. The keys must be out of the ignition, and all the doors must be closed while the vehicle sits overnight. This is craziness. Also, many of the onboard computers run until all the doors are closed and after the vehicle is shut off and the keys removed. So then you start the vehicle and you let it idle for 2 to 3 minutes in park and in neutral. Nobody in the world does that.
Right.
Okay. Then you turn on the headlights, the heater defroster, the rear defroster for 3 to 5 minutes of warm-up phase. Let the idle settle down. Put it in gear and drive through the city at 25 miles an hour, going up to 35 to 40 miles an hour before slowing down to stop. Don't roll through the stop. Make sure the car is completely stopped. Can you imagine you and I doing this?
No.
We'd be using bad words to one another.
Oh, you would be. I know, for sure.
Accelerate from each stop in a normal fashion, not overly conservative, but not like you're competing in a drag race. I see the time. Mm-hmm. I got it. Okay, then you enter the freeway, and we need to get on the freeway. So enter the freeway ramp and allow enough room with respect to the others so you can do a half to a third to three-quarters throttle to accelerate up to freeway speed. So they want you to kind of give her a little bit of hail to get up on the freeway speed. When you've accelerated to about 60, which means that's parking in the 202 up in Scottsdale,
Yeah. Stay
in the slow lane and maintain a speed of 55 to 60 for a minimum of 5 miles. Can you imagine someone on the 202, the 101 northbound into Scottsdale, doing 55 or 60?
No.
They'd have 14 cars in the trunk of their car.
Yeah.
Please use the cruise control to help you. Yeah, like we're going to be able to.
And there was one for each different car. I mean, that was just a general drive cycle, but there's one for Ford and this and that.
Then you have to get off on a long freeway ramp, take your foot off the accelerator, and let it coast down until it stops under its own power. Do not use the foot brake and do not shift gears in this coast down phase. Holy mackerel. Then that's only just step three. And then there's four, and there's five, and there's six, and there's seven. So you can imagine that it's going to take 100 miles to hit all of those buttons. Now, the one that bothers me is you. You'd hit the high acceleration, but coming off the ramp and coasting on the whole ramp is not you.
Oh, boy.
Because you're fighting for a lane on the left and on the right, and you're pushing people out of the way. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. If you want to talk cars, you have a car problem, or perhaps somebody actually said to you that you need the following services, then that's something that we can help you decide whether you do or you don't. 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Mark Salem here. Sitting next to me is Renee Salem. We've been in the car repair business for 37 years. And we have been office to office, side by side, lock to lock, every bit of the way 37
seconds. I don't know how I've done it.
Yeah. You probably know a lot more about cars than a lot of the guys I know.
I wouldn't say anything
about that. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair. And Ron, you stay right there because you're first. And Thompson's Auto Repair has been around Mesa since 1970. It's the only auto repair shop on my best car repair shops list. Brian and Thelma are good people. They are the best kind of people. They have ASC certified technicians. Brian is a guy that's very kind. Thelma is equally as kind. They understand good customer service. Their technicians understand. Find it, diagnose it, bid it, fix it, and make doggone sure you did fix it. So if you're in Mason, you don't have a repair shop, then try Thompson's. Just go in for an oil change and see how you feel. See if they trust you. See if you trust them. And see if there's someone that deserves your trust. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Ron, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Like your show.
Thank you.
Hey, I got a 2000 Silverado 5.3 engine.
Okay.
And it's showing low oil pressure. It sits a lot. I don't drive it much. But when it's idling, that gauge will go down to nothing.
Okay. Any clatter that goes with that?
What'd you say?
Any clatter, clicking, or anything like that that goes with it?
Well, I'm afraid to, you know, as soon as I see it starting to get that low, I gas it up a little, and then the pressure comes up on the gauge.
But okay.
Is there another place to test to put an oil pressure gauge in besides that sending unit?
Well, no, that's the best place. What we do is we unscrew. The oil pressure sensor is just an on-off switch. Mm-hmm. So light on and light off. Or it could be attached to your gauge and it has a variable reading. What we do is to verify the sending unit and verify the gauge operation, we simply take the sending unit out, plug in a gauge with about a 3 foot, 4 foot, 5 foot hose, high pressure hose. We run it into the passenger compartment and you drive it around for a couple days.
Yeah. So I just know that that's really hard to get to back there.
Well, I know, but on a 1 to 10 scale, it might be a 8, 9 for you, and for my guys, it's a 3. So, I mean, they
must have little hands.
Well, no, they just know. See, it's all about accessibility. They know what they got to move, or they know what they got to do to get where they're at. Now, I want to bring to your attention one thing. I want you to overfill the engine by a quart, and then I want you to go to 2 quarts, and here's why. I think, I'm working off memory here, that there is the pumps in the front of that motor, and then we have this pipe that feeds the oil pump. Mm-hmm. And there's an O-ring in that pipe that fails. And intermittently it sucks air. Now, the repair is to pull the oil pan down and put a new O-ring in that assembly. That's the repair. And your car's 16 years old, 17 years old. Yeah. So if I don't want to see blue smoke out of your tailpipe, because then Mark has told Ron to go too far. But 1 or 2 quarts over, and then I want to hear, I've never had that problem. Then we're going to drain out 2 quarts, and you go, problem back. It's a no-brainer. We got to pull the pump, we got to pull the pan, and replace the connection between the pump in the front and the oil pump in the back. And that's an O-ring. So it's one of those things where it's a dollar part and it's $350 labor. But I don't know how much it is, but I'm just giving you an example.
Yeah, I imagine that's a pretty big job to jerk the oil pan off of that.
Well, it just depends. Is it a four-wheel drive or two-wheel drive?
Four-wheel drive.
Okay, so that means we're not going to take it out the back, so we're going to have to probably take the two mounts loose, lift up the motor. We're probably going to have to take the fan shroud and loosen it up so we can lift it up, because if we're really stupid, we lift the motor up and the fan hits the shroud and blows the shroud off, and of course we have to buy that. Really and truly, again, on a 1 to 10 scale, that's a 5 or a 6 or maybe a 7. We've had oil pumps off. They know how to get them off without bending them. They know how to put them back on with a good gasket, and we're not dealing with quart gaskets like we did in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. We're talking about neoprene. We're talking about silicone gaskets. We're talking about a new gasket sealer. We put it on there. We slide it up. There's no chance of the gasket moving out of whack. So it's a lot easier than perhaps you and I remember it in the earlier days.
All right. Have you run into that very often?
Yes.
No oil pressure?
Well, it's not no oil pressure. It's the symptoms are similar to yours. Except you don't let it go to a rattle. So it's intermittently, my oil pressure falls to nothing. I might get a red oil light on, and then I get some clattering, then it goes away.
Yeah.
And sometimes if I hit the brakes real hard, now think about this. If I hit the brakes real hard, then the oil pressure goes up. What's happening there?
All the oil rushes up to the front, huh?
You ought to be a technician, that's why. No, that's exactly it. If I hit the brakes real hard, all the oil goes to the front, that O-ring sucks, and then the oil pressure changes. So it's a one-time job, by the way. I don't think we've done two. We've not done it twice. So the good news. How many miles are on that?
About 150.
Okay. Well, you know you've been around the world six times, so that O-ring's giving you good service. It was a stupid idea, and everybody else, you know, puts a flange connection there and stuff like that. So, you know, they cut corners, and that's one of the ramifications. So, well, good luck to you, Ron.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right. You betcha. All righty.
2 minutes.
Have you heard that before? The common denominator there is fluctuating oil pressure.
Pressure, yeah. And I think somebody just called about that the other day. So
yeah.
I know.
And if it's a Ford, then you give them really bad news because that means it's the death knell.
Yeah. Chevy doesn't.
By the way, how is your Ford?
It's great.
Is it?
I
really
love it. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
Yeah. You'll notice that the Dodge got us home in the blizzard the other day from Pine to Payson.
Barely.
And maybe that's fine. You can use barely. Had we been in your Ford, we would have been frozen to death.
You know what? It's just a totally different. I wouldn't have even taken my Ford there.
Really?
Yes. Okay. It's not made for that condition. Neither was your truck, really. By the time we got home, we were both pretty stressed out.
Oh, we got caught in whiteout blizzard a week ago Friday,
couple weeks ago.
And we had dinner with some friends, and we were coming back from Pine. Normally a 15-minute drive. It's an hour and 15 minutes at 5 miles an hour. The snowplow fastest so fast that we were going to pull in behind him, but he's doing 80, and we're scared to do that.
Yeah.
You're watching the right side of the road saying a little left, a little left. I'm watching the left side of the road. We don't even know where the road's at. The headlights freeze over. We can't even see. The windshield wipers are working as fast as they can, and I'm looking at you and I, and neither one of us has a jacket. So I'm thinking if we slide off the road and we go down a big hill, we're in really big trouble. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to leave her there, and I'm going to hike up to the road and find help. I'm just kidding. No, I'm going to sit in the warm truck, and you go get help.
Okay.
How about that? All righty, 602-508-0960 if you have a car question, 602-508-0960. One more time, 602-508-0960. And during the day, you can grab me at mark@salemboysauto.com. Mark@salemboysauto.com. I answer all my emails. If you have a car question, just start with the year, make, and model and mileage. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. This is Under the Hood every Saturday from 10 to 12. We're here talking about cars, your car, car questions, car problems, car repairs. What do I do about this? What do I do about that? But let me tell you about Kurt's Auto Repair. Kurt's Auto Repair is an interesting place for a variety of reasons because Kurt is very honest and so is his staff. They just were recognized as this year's Better Business Bureau Ethic Awards winner.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah. That says a lot about them. They won that award in their classification. They opened up in 1987. He's been working on domestic and import cars, both gas and diesel. He has ASC certified and ASC master technicians. I think his service manager is a master, and I think his lead tech is a master.
Yeah.
And that's pretty special.
Yeah.
But Kurtz is on I-17 in Bell, northeast corner. He's got well-trained people. And all you have to do is meet Kurt and his family, and you'll know why he's on our list.
You're going to be out there April 1st. We're going to do a live remote for his 30th anniversary.
Oh, good.
So,
good,
going to be fun.
Yep. And he's been in business since 1987, so that's the 30 years right there. All right, let's go to the phones. Morgan, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Hey, I called in a couple months ago about a transfer case that was leaking that kept blowing out the rear seal. I did get that fixed. The clip was on the wrong side of the shaft, and the shaft kept moving back and bumping the seal. It's been holding great, running great. So, but I do have another question for you.
Okay.
My Jeep is a 98 Jeep Cherokee. I have 217,000 miles on it. Motor runs great, starts great, runs great, except for I have this issue when it's starting. Sometimes that 90% of the time it'll just right over and fire up, and other times it will it'll sit there and grind and grind and grind, and then I let off the key and it kind of coughs and backfires, sputters, tries to fire, and it stops. And when it gets into that cycle, I can't get it to start.
Okay, here's what you have to do. Here's what you're going to have to do at the very beginning, is when you know that you're in the crank but no catch mode. I want you to turn the key off, and then I want you to turn the key back on and count to three, and just to the on position, not to the start position. That's called a key cycle, and I want you to do three key cycles.
Okay.
And then I want you to hit the key and see what happens. What you're describing is the absence of fuel. What you're describing is crank but no catch. So, all right, not crank, but it's crank but no catch. You might also hit it with some ether and see if it starts and runs for a second and dies, because that reinforces the issue that it's a fuel pump. Have you ever replaced a fuel pump in 217,000 miles?
Yes, sir. I just replaced it 1,000 miles ago.
Okay. Well, that's the real question. Now, you could go rent a fuel pressure gauge and hook it up to your rail and run it through the crack in the hood and tape it to the front of the windshield and monitor your fuel pressure. But what I'm asking you to do by cycling the key three times is if we have a leak in the fuel system, the fuel pressure regulator is leaking, one of the injectors is leaking, then overnight the pressure drops to nothing. Well, it takes a few minutes for the computer and the fuel pump to re-energize your fuel system. So by cycling the key on and off, you're doing that. So if you say to me, Mark, I'm cycling the key on and off three times and it does start and it does run, then the question is what's happening to the fuel pressure from the time you park it to the time you start in the morning? And you're going to have to figure that out.
Okay.
It could be the check valve in the tank, it could be the fuel pressure regulator, or it could be one of the injectors leaking. Now, if one of the injectors is leaking, you're going to have a black smoke, puff of black smoke, and watch the tailpipe and know which side it's on, drivers or passengers, so you look in the rearview mirror. So when you hit the key, if you see a puff of black smoke or some 1, 2, 3 seconds of black smoke coming out of one side or the other, what that's telling you is one of the injector is dripping fuel into that cylinder, into a cylinder, and it's running a tad rich on restart. So then you know, and then you pull spark plugs out of that thing, and one of them is going to be black, and that'll be the one that's leaking. That'll be the injector that's leaking. So the fuel pressure regulator is the first problem, the most likely. The check valve in the tank is the second most, and the injector is a long way away.
Okay.
All righty?
Yep, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Yep. The other question I have is, I heard you just advertise Kurt's Auto Repair, and I'm up in the Northwest Valley, and I wanted to take it in for a diagnosis. Is he somebody that you would recommend for that?
Oh, yeah. Eric is one of the best technicians out there. He's in my top 10 class for sure.
Okay.
So Eric is a really good guy. He handles the floor, and then Jeff is a service writer. And between those two guys, I think you're going to get your money's worth times two.
They've got you covered.
Yeah, they got you covered.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome, Morgan. Good luck to you. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Real quick, the headlights that we were talking about, why we were having problems, folks. Mm-hmm. Incandescent headlights is like the old-time light bulbs. They create heat. Remember when you had to turn the light bulb on, then you'd go to grab it, and it was hotter than heck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's called incandescent. The old headlights on cars were incandescent. That created heat, which means the snow wouldn't stick to your headlight lenses. Well, Mark Salem and his son sell a whole lot of LED replacements for headlights. And the LED is a whiter and better light, and adjusted properly, it's a 180-degree viewpoint. Well, Renee and I have figured out that LEDs are really bad in the snow because they don't create enough heat to melt the snow on your headlights.
Yeah, yeah, it was not good.
You could have gotten out
three times and done it at least.
Yeah. And just we had as many as 3 or 4 inches of snow on the grill and on the headlights. But now this is what I'm going to try. I'm going to try waxing the headlights to see if the snow will slide off. I'm also going to try some a spray oil.
Or Rain-X or something.
Well,
I don't know. Rain-X.
Rain-X might work.
Or you're talking about that Goo Gone stuff?
No, I'm talking about the stuff you use for cooking Pam.
Oh.
Some kind of a spray oil. And
yeah.
So but I got to figure something out in that kind of a situation, because it got to the point where we had nothing to see. And when I got out to see what was the matter, I saw the snow. We wiped it off. And I remember you saying, I can see as if there was some big light from
You're
heaven.
You're going to have to try that by yourself, because I'm not going with you on any more snowstorms.
Right. It was your idea to go there for dinner.
I know.
So we were in that predicament because of you,
not
because
really.
Of me.
Linda can vouch for me. No.
What are you talking about?
She told us not to come. It was going to be bad,
but you didn't listen.
You wanted to go to Flagstaff. We only went 30 miles or 30 minutes.
None of that's true, folks. All righty. Are you on your way to?
I'm on my way.
Where are you going?
I got to go get my gray hair taken care of that you give me every week.
No kidding?
Yeah.
So you going to the barber down there on Baseline?
Yeah, right.
Where are you going?
I might stop and get a pedicure, too.
Oh, you know, I someday I think I'll go with you just to see what the heck they do.
Begging you to go, but you never want to go.
I envision you go there and they have these big grinders.
Yeah,
and they're grinding on your toenails, and then they have these spray cans.
I'll make sure they have that for you, but no.
I'll tell you right now, there ain't no woman touching my toes. I'm just telling you that. And that's all there is to it. 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to be here till noon, so you've got time to call in if you want. We have two callers right now, but 602-508-0960 is the phone number. You can get in line, and we'll get to you just as quick as we can. I'm going to take real quick Francis first. Francis, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Yeah, I listen to your program frequently, and I have a Mustang, and I'm debating on changing the mufflers on it. Do you have any recommendations where it might take that or what it might cost?
What year is it?
05.
Okay. And why are you changing the mufflers?
Well, I guess I want a little bit more noise out of it.
Oh, I got just the place for you.
Yeah.
Mesa muffler. I'm not sending you to anybody that I haven't used myself. I started using them in 1969. Now, Jerry was the first guy, and then there was another guy, and then now he's on the third generation of this group of people. Third generation. But Mesa Muffler knows exactly how to talk to you, how to describe the different mufflers, plus they have a variety of different mufflers, and they're going to use like a 1-5 scale. And you're going to talk to Rick, by the way, because Rick runs it. And
okay.
So you're going to go talk to them, and then... You know, you can decide on whether you want different tips and if you want them here or there, or maybe you want both of them coming out one side, or maybe you want them coming out in front of the rear wheels or behind the rear wheels or straight out the back. All of that stuff is possible, and he'll give you a price right then and there. Here's what they don't do. They don't use a bunch of brackets and slip and slide joints with a bunch of clamps around them. They weld everything in. So it's really a nice job. It's forever, and all the hot rodders in town that want perfect exhaust systems go to Mesa Muffler.
What I've read about this, all it does is change the muffler from about the wheel back.
Okay, that's fine, because the catalytic converter's up front,
okay.
And then you got the muffler. And so what you're saying to them is, you know, take a listen to this. I want a little, I'm guessing here, I want something a little throatier. I want something a little bit louder, but I don't want to wake up my neighbors on Sunday morning as I idle out of my driveway.
Yeah.
That's it.
I refer to it as giving it a little bit of character.
That's exactly right. And then you say there's three different characters. There's low, medium, and high. I want to go from where I'm at to somewhere between low and medium.
Yeah.
Something like that. All right. Mesa Muffler.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're more than welcome. IMM Auto Service. Stay right there, Joe. IMM Auto Service has been in Tempe since 1972. They're in the northeast corner of Tempe, just south of the 202, west of the 101. David has been working on all kinds of cars, domestic and imports. But David is my go-to guy when I have a Saab, a Volvo, a Fiat, or an Alfa Romeo, especially when it's some kind of a weird problem. David is one of the best technicians, and his staff works on those cars. And even more important, they have access to parts for those cars that don't cost an arm and a leg. They know where to buy parts all over the world that are going to work in those cars that are substantially less than what you're going to buy at the dealer. So if you have a Volvo, a Saab, a Fiat, or an Alfa Romeo, you need a relationship with IMM. But if you have a Chevy, a Ford, a Dodge in your carport as well, they can handle that. IMM Auto Service, northeast portion of Tempe. Hey, Joe, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I've listened to your show back when you were on the other station.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I've got a silly question.
Okay.
My wife has a 2001 S10 Blazer.
Okay.
Okay, I try to change the oil faithfully every 3,000 miles.
Okay.
But my problem is after I change the oil, I can't figure out how to turn out the oil where it says change your oil.
Uh-huh.
Turn that light out.
Oh, okay.
Where it serves as engine.
Yeah, it's going to be a change oil or service engine soon, SES light or something like that.
Service engine soon.
Okay, service engine soon. Yeah, that's going to be on the internet. You're going to query 01S10 reset oil change light.
Okay.
Now, here's something that you can try, because this was a very popular way. You turn the key on to the on position, and you pump the throttle three times to the floor, like this. One, let go. Two, let go. Three, let go. And then you turn the key off, wait for 10 seconds, turn the key back on, and the light should be out. That works for a lot of older model Chevrolets.
Okay.
But I promise you, if you just Google Chevy S10 reset oil change light, you're going to find the procedure on the internet. Then when you do your oil changes, you reset the light. Now, the algorithm that goes around is the computer is looking on how many times has this been jackrabbited from a stop? How many times has it gone through a heat cycle all the way up to full temperature and then all the way down? How many miles here? How many miles there? How many highway? How many city? And it keeps constant track of what this car is doing, and it turns the light on based on this whole big picture. I read a deposition in a legal case the other day, and the technician who was a service writer at a major dealership, he was being deposed because it has to do with this case. And he told the interrogator, the attorney that was talking to him, that the computer has the ability to check the viscosity of the oil and then turn the light on. And I want to tell you, that's about as far away from the truth as that Mark Salem's never committed a sin in his life. So it has nothing to do with what he said. And, of course, he's passing his knowledge on to his customers. And it's just one of many. But it's independents, chain stores, and dealerships. We all give bad information because we're ignorant. But in your particular case, here's why I tell you that. Sometimes it'll call for an oil change at $2,500. And sometimes it'll call for an oil change at $4,500. It has to do with how that vehicle's driven. You'll get longer service driving from here to Flagstaff and getting it warmed up really good, and at a constant highway speed, then you're going to get city driving. You get a longer oil change interval. So that's what happens, okay?
Okay, thank you, Mark.
You betcha, buddy. You betcha. Change oil light. Reset oil light. I got to do this because people will say, what part of your show did you talk about that? And I'm going to say, we were approximately, where is it at? 5235. We're talking 602-508-0960. Hey, Gil, we got anybody hanging?
Lines are open.
Lines are open, so Gil is snoring in the background, but you can't hear him, but I can. But I can't talk to you about OnStar BlueLink Sync and Uconnect. OnStar is for General Motors car. BlueLink's for Hyundai. Sync is for Ford. And Uconnect is for Chrysler. And what that is that's a computer system in your car. It's kind of like your iPhone. It tells you where you're at. It tells you what's going on. It's notified if your airbags go off. And you've seen the commercials where somebody comes on and says, hey, Mark, are you okay? I noticed your airbag came off. Do you want me to send for help? Do you want me to do this? There's really good about all those systems. And they're a subscription, and you have to pay for them. So there's really good things. Here's the bad thing about those is they'll call you and say, Mark, I noticed the check engine light just came on. And right now, Mark, it's an emissions code, and we don't really know what's the matter with your car, but you really need to stop and have this car serviced as quickly as possible. And I know where you're at, and I just happen to know that ABC is right around the corner, and ABC is the dealership. So you can stop by, and actually I've called ahead, and they're waiting for you. Here's the problem with that as far as I'm concerned. First of all, the check engine light is yellow, and yellow means caution, and yellow does not mean you have to stop and address it then and there. A red oil light is stop. A temperature light that's red is stop. A brake light is stop now, not tomorrow, not in a mile, because people that happens all the time. We get a red engine light, a temperature light, or a red oil light, and people said, well, I tried to get the last 4 miles home, and my answer to them is this. You need a $6,000 engine. If you would have shut it off there, you would have had a $120 tow bill, and I would have been able to fix the problem. but instead you drove it 4 more miles, 10 more miles, 15 more miles home, and you wiped out the engine. So the problem with this whole hypothesis is that this is a marketing tool for General Motors cars, for Hyundais, for Ford, and for Chrysler. And they're also going to say, hey, Mark, your change oil light just came on and you're due for an oil change. I've arranged to have an oil change done for you at this place at this time. So I'm an independent guy. This is going to hurt me. But I also know what's going to happen here is that the, what's the word I'm looking for gear here, Gil? The credibility of some voice coming over the, you know, your radio speakers and talking to you is really hard for me to overcome. But I'm convinced already that there's a whole lot of the information is more focused towards marketing than what's in your best interest. So you can take that for what it's worth. The last thing is through this console on your car, that's how the bad guys are going to get into your car. They're going to come through this way. Now, hacking your car is a piece of cake. I can't do it, but I know a lot of people that can do it. And you saw that with 60 Minutes or Dateline or 2020 a while back where two ladies were in a big parking lot driving a car around. This guy's got this little laptop computer. He pushes a button, and when she hits the brakes, they go to the floor. That can happen. So I know exactly what they did to make that happen. And it has to do with the ABS system, and they fed bad information to the ABS system, which dumped all the fluid to all four tires. And consequently, her foot went to the floor. So Mark Salem has decided that if the airbag deploys, I'm quite sure my wife's going to know it, and so am I. So are my kids. So I've closed this door altogether. I also know that when I buy a new car, and when we bought the F car for Renee and I bought my Dodge, they marketed the heck out to me. They offered me 2 years of free service and stuff like that. But I see those documents come back to me from my customers, and they're wanting to flush the power steering fluid at 10 and 15 and 20,000 miles. And there's just no way it needs that. There, I remember one guy had 11 tire rotations in a period of 4 years, and there's no way that car needed 11 tire rotations. Virtually every time he went in for an oil change, they sold him a tire rotation. And he was a retired policeman, and he asked me to look over his maintenance bill, so I built a complete log, date, mileage, and what they did. And I handed it to him, and I said, your car has been so over-maintained that your cost in any other environment where somebody was looking out for your best interest rather than their own would have been half as much or even less. So, folks, newer model cars from probably 2010 to the present time, they've spaced out the maintenance so far that you're going to spend 15 to 25% of what you spent on your 2000 to 2010 car. Everything is better. Everything is longer. Everything lasts longer. Your spark plugs, your transmission fluid, your cooling system, your batteries, your electrical systems, your brakes, all that stuff has just been engineered better than it used to be. So it's up to you to protect yourself. It's not up to me to protect you, but it's up for me to give you information to help you make an intelligent decision. So that's your choice. We're going to be back for another hour. Now's the time to get on. There's five lines open, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And don't forget, when you buy a new car and you get 2 years of free service, that's free service of X. You still have to pay for all those other things you're told you need to have. We'll be back right after this.
Automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next hour, you're stuck with me. We're talking about car repair, your car repair problems, your car repair questions, and perhaps if you have an argument between you and your spouse and you need somebody to settle that argument, then just call me up and tell me what the two sides of the argument are, and I'm willing to help you out. The lines are wide open. Miguel, you're going to be first, but 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And I'm going to deal with the marital issue right after I get done talking to Miguel, okay? I know that that's something you can hardly wait for, but just stick around because I'm going to deal with that. Miguel, how are you today?
Good. Yourself?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I got a 2012 Toyota Corolla with 72,000 miles. Maintenance on the vehicle is done, like, you know, by manufacturer instructions, like every 10,000 miles.
Okay.
So far, everything's so good. But I noticed a couple, about 10, 20,000 miles ago, when the vehicle is idling, and then, like, normally it idles around 800 RPMs, but sometimes it drops below that, and you can tell it idles a little rough. But then the weirdest part is when I turn on my lights, it goes away. So I don't know what's causing this.
Ooh, wow. Well, first of all, is it an automatic or a standard?
Automatic.
Okay. And is it in drive or park when it's at 800?
Park.
Okay. What happens when you put it into drive? What kind of RPM do you have then?
I think it goes back to the normal. Let me double check. I'm actually on the vehicle right now.
Okay, all right.
It just stays around 800.
So 800 in park and 800 in drive.
Yep.
Okay.
But at some point it drops below 800, and that's okay. When you get a little rough idle.
Okay. Well, I don't think it ought to be at 800. I think the specification is going to be less than that. The two issues are is when it drops below 800, it's kind of rough. And number two, when I turn on my headlights, it goes away. I would think that you'd want to just follow one or the other of those issues. But to try to fix both of them at the same time is going to cost you a lot of money. And I don't think that's in your best interest. So I think you should pick one. I think you should pick the idle issue, or you should pick the I turn on the car or I turn on the headlights and the rough idle goes away. Because either way you attack that, there is a good possibility that one is related to the other. So when you fix A, it'll fix B. Or if you fix B, it'll fix A. Anytime you have an electrical issue like you have, the first thing you do is spend $35, $45 doing a complete electrical test. Battery, alternator, regulator. All your grounds to your engine, your body, your frame, your transmission, the core support, the headlights, you do all that kind of work to make sure that everything's tied together. So once you look at that and you see how many amps the alternator's putting out and you look at the diode pattern, and this is stuff that can't be done at your local AutoZone. We test it where it lives. We don't test it on a bench anymore. We test it right where it lives. I've never seen a problem like yours before, but I know what I'd do. I'd go in and clean up the throttle blades, and I'd clean up the idle air control motor, which
is... I've done that before. I cleaned the throttle blade. I called a long time ago. I don't recall if it was your program or another one, and that was one of the things that I was recommended. Okay. And I did clean that, and the issue still stayed the same. Nothing changed.
Okay. When you cleaned the throttle blades, was there a good ring of dirt around the throttle blades or not?
Nothing major. Just a little bit.
Okay. Well, see here, that's the issue, Miguel, is you don't know what major is because you've only seen one set of throttle blades. But a seasoned technician knows what's really bad, what's a 10 on a 10 scale, and what's a 5, and what's a 1 on a 10 scale. And part of cleaning the throttle blades and cleaning the idle air control motor is understand how those two work together. So when we look at the idle air control motor, we have to look at minimum idle authority, and we have to look at the idle settings, and then we have to look at the idle air control settings and the TPS settings, and those all have to be coordinated. So if the throttle position sensor is saying A and the idle air control motor's B, then the computer doesn't know what to do because it needs to see A and A in order to do A. So there's a disconnect there. I can't help you fix this because these symptoms are beyond my ability to sit here and tell you. I'm just going to tell you, you need to focus on the idle issue or you need to focus on the electrical miss issue. But to go both of them is not in your best interest. Thank you, Miguel. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960.
Dan is next.
Before I take Dan, I've got to get this marital issue out of the way.
Okay.
We were talking about gray hair. My wife is going to have her gray hair done. Okay? She blames that on me. I had gray hair long before she did. I had gray hair in my nose and in my ears, like most guys do. So it's nothing to do with who's hassling who. Joe Berdalsky is a friend of mine. I love Joe Berdalsky. He is one of my very best friends. His wife, Tony, blames him for her gray hair. I'm telling you, folks, that's nothing could be further from the truth. Tony doesn't have any gray hair compared to Joe. And Joe has more hair on his head than all of the rest of his friends have on their back. This guy's got a head of hair that every man would enjoy having at the age of 50 or 60 or 70. But Joe's one of those full-headed hair guys, but he is grayer than Tony. So, Tony, you're wrong. Joe did not cause your gray hair. He has his own. So if you've got yours, you've got yours. Dan, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Yeah, hi. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
I have a 2004 Taurus with the better engine. I forget, the overhead valve engine.
Okay.
And about 6 months ago, I had the spark plugs changed. And ever since then, the check engine light has been on. And I'm just wondering if I'm doing any damage to my car by running like that.
Well, we don't know till we know what the code is going to tell us what state the problem's at.
I had the code checked, and it was running lean.
Okay. Well, a lean mixture causes the temperature of the engine to rise. It also causes the catalytic converter to run hotter. You're going to miss some performance. It's going.
It runs good, and the temperature has always been the same since I got the car. When it's sort of in the middle of the gauge.
Okay. Well, you can't argue with me if you're asking me my opinion, and I'm telling you, I don't care what your gauge says. The motor's going to run hotter if it's running leaner. You ask me, am I causing any damage? And I'm telling you, the motor's running hotter, the exhaust is running hotter. Now, your spark plugs didn't cause the lean condition.
Okay? No, I know them. But when they change the plugs, don't they have to take a lot of stuff off the engine to move it around and stuff like that?
No.
Well, because some of the plugs are in the back. I mean, one bank is in the back toward the firewall. And there's a whole lot of stuff on top of the engine.
I'm not going there. I sense, and I could be wrong, I sense what you want me to say is that this is going to be their fault because they did the spark plugs. And I'm not doing that. Because the real fact here is that someone has to find out what's causing the lean condition, which could be a fuel filter, could be a fuel pump, it could be an EGR valve that's stuck open, it can be a vacuum leak at the brake booster, and none of those have to do anything with pulling your spark plugs. So I don't know who I'm sticking up for, but I'm telling you, the odds are against this being their problem. Now, if you find out that there's a big vacuum hose that's been knocked off, that would have caused a rough idle, that had caused a lean condition, and that had caused a check engine light. But you would have noticed that the day you drove away. So the easiest thing to do is just go have somebody look at the lean code and determine what's causing the lean code. Once you determine what's causing it, then you fix it. Then once you fix it and you drive it for a week and you don't have a check engine light, then you and everybody else will know if the shop that changed the spark plugs caused the problem. That's it. That's what has to happen. Let me tell you about Air Park Auto Service. Air Park Auto Service is up in North Scottsdale. Nadine runs Air Park Auto Service. Way back in the mid-80s, Nadine and her husband Stacy and my wife Renee and I, we were all building our auto repair facilities together. Nadine and Stacy were kind of our good friends because we both had construction projects going. We were both really young. We both had borrowed a lot of money, and we were concerned. Stacy passed away from leukemia a while back, and Nadine is still there. Those of you ladies that want to deal with a lady-run organization, Air Park Auto. They're on Raintree just east of Hayden, which is just south of Bell Road. Nadine is the sole owner. She doesn't answer to any man. She makes all the decisions. And she's tough. And she knows a good technician. She knows what they sound like, what they look like, and what their work looks like. So if you're in North Scottsdale, they are on my best car repair shops list, by the way. They have a state-of-the-art, clean, green facility. They have all the tools necessary to service and fix your cars. So, again, Air Park Auto. You go from probably, let me see here, probably Indian Bend to Carefree, 56th Street to Fountain Hills. Air Park Auto, in my opinion, is the best shop in that entire North Scottsdale area. 602-508-0960. Anybody else, Gil?
Warren is next.
Warren, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. I have a question about a transmission. I just picked up a 1990 Plymouth Caravan. It's in really good shape. but I'm having a problem. I think I'm having a problem with the transmission. Sometimes I listen for it. It shifts, right? Shifts up normally.
Okay.
And then sometimes it, and once in a while, it does it. But I can, accelerate. You know what I mean? And I spoke to a guy on the phone, and he says, well, I wouldn't be able to accelerate. You know, it wouldn't be able to climb. And it's just, I'm really confused now. I don't know
well,
if it's a fluid or if it's an electrical problem. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, but this is really, this is not the way we do things. You're trying to fix the, you're trying to find the problem with your transmission over the phone.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
my problem. I don't want to be taken to the cleaners because I've been taken to the cleaners many times.
Oh,
so, and it was just for a starter.
Okay. All right. So let me get this straight. You're going to call a whole bunch of guys who half of them have their interest in front of your own.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And so you're going to get 25 different guys to tell you 25 different things, and then you're going to pick the guy that you like the best. You're going to go have that done, and I guarantee you that's not going to fix your car. So you're worried about somebody ripping you off, but on the other hand, what you're doing is almost a guaranteed way for you to get – you're basically spending your money on some guy on the phone's guess. I don't understand that. Let me offer you the alternative way. Choice Transmission in Tempe, who's not on my list, but is a good shop. Adolph's Transmission in Glendale, he is on my list. Automatic Transmission Exchange on Washington, they're on my list. All three of them will drive your caravan for free. They want you to get in and show them what to do. How do you make it happen? They wanted you to demonstrate the problem. Then you get your butt in the driver's seat, in the passenger seat. They switch places, and then they get it to happen. Then and only then can anybody tell you what the fix is. I'll just tell you one thing. I want you to manually shift your caravan for a whole day. Pull it down into low. Click that shifter forward. So you manually shift it and see if the problem goes away, because that's something that will help them determine. I'm going to leave you with, when we come back, I'm going to tell you a story where a lady took her car in and had a noise, and they bid it for $3,800 worth of transmission work. It got really ugly. And I'll tell you the end of the story right after this. My name is Mark Salem. It's 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. The lines are wide open. Gil is here. He's my engineer. And you can talk to Gil at 602-508-0960, and he will then take your information. And then when you get on the air, if you'll give me your make and model of your car and the mileage, and then tell me what the symptoms are, what the issue is, that would help us out. So let me finish the story I started last break. Lady takes her car in to a transmission shop, and she says, I got a noise. And so they keep the car overnight, and they say, yeah, it needs a transmission. And I think the quote was $3,800. Her husband's a friend of mine, and so he calls me and he says, this is what I got. And I says, well, can I talk to her? And he says, sure. So she calls me, and I said, now, it makes a noise in the morning. Yes. How long does it make the noise? Less than a minute. Does it make the noise any other time of the day? No. Is it only in the morning again? Yes. Is it cold or hot? Makes no difference. It's first thing in the morning. Is the oil level good? Yes. If you step on it really hard, does the downshift real clear, crisp? Oh, yeah. Does it shift? Does it go in? So slips into gear instead of like the snap of a carrot. She says, no, the second time. That's how it sounds. I said, okay. Well, there's nothing in the transmission in the morning when you're in park that's actually moving except the front pump. And you say it goes away in 60 seconds, and then you never hear it throughout the day. This ain't a transmission problem. I'm happy to look at it for you because your husband Dan is a good friend of mine. So if you'll drop by the shop, we'll listen to it tomorrow morning. She says, fine. It's in the front of the engine. It's a timing chain tensioner. It has nothing to do with the transmission. So I said to her, and I said to her before she brought her car in, when you take it back to the transmission shop, ask the transmission shop to write down exactly what's wrong with it, and then write down the estimate, and then just write down their name, because you're going to borrow some money from your father in Milwaukee, and he's going to want to know all that information. And so you're going to take that bill and fax it to your dad, and then he's your dad's going to call, and he's going to wonder if he's going to loan his daughter $3,800 and blah, 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 blah. She says, tell me that again. So I gave it to her again. I said, this separates the men from the boys. She says, well, I don't know how what you're thinking about, but I'll do what you said. So she calls me back, and she says, I'm on my way to your shop. I said, fine. She says, I got there, and I had said to him, I called him and said, hey, I want to borrow some money from my dad, so would you put, you know, your diagnosis on there and your bill on there, and then just write your name, because my dad wants to talk to you. So when I got there, they handed me this thing that was folded into thirds, gave me my keys, and said, you know, we hope we can do your transmission. She says, fine. And so she got in the car, and she opened it up, and it's just a blank invoice. It says, check out transmission. So she goes back inside, and she says, oh, you forgot to write down, you know, what's the matter with it and what the bill is, and then you write your name down so I can have my dad call you. And they said, no, good enough, we told you. Now, folks, if that doesn't smell to high heaven, I don't know what does. Everybody, you should know without a question. Yeah. And here's the problem. They're worried about the Attorney General Fraud Division for the state of Arizona. They don't want to write that down because what they said wasn't true. Here's my real question. How are they going to fix a $2,000 engine problem by doing a $3,800 transmission? The risk was huge. They were going to replace the transmission, but they weren't going to do anything to the front of the engine unless they were going to paint the transmission and fix the front of the engine and then tell her the noise is gone. I don't know what they were thinking or if they were just ignorant about diagnosis. The fact of the matter is that this was never a transmission. That's why you have to protect yourself. And every time a shop, including my own, says to you, you need this, your answer should be simple. What symptoms are you going to fix that I have today that necessitates this repair? You need to flush your cooling system. What symptoms do I have? Well, come on out here. I'm going to show you a new coolant. I'm going to show you yours. Yours is mud. This one's green. This one's red. This one's purple. This one's orange. This is what's supposed to be in your car. This mud is what you have. That works. Or you say, you need an alignment. Why? Come on out here. I'll show you. Look at the wear on this front tire. Look at the wear. This one over here, there's no wear on the edge. This one here is worn out on the inside edge of the tire. That means there's a toe problem on this side. I need to reset the toe. So I'm going to $85, and then I'm going to put the front ones on the back and the back ones on the front. And you'll know within a couple of months if I did my job, because if the inside wears, I didn't do my job. And if the inside doesn't wear, boom, I fixed it. That's how it happens. You have to hold your shop's feet to the fire. So anyway, we fixed the car. She was happy. I was happy. I think I saved her a lot of money. But the bottom line is there's lots of shops out there that are good shops. Go to SalemBoysAuto.com. I've got shops all over the valley. The Northwest, the Northeast, Central Phoenix, the Southeast, and the Southwest. I've got all four quadrants set up just for you. It's not something that I like sending business to other shops. I want to identify good shops for you no matter where you live. So go to SalemBoysAuto.com. And we're right there. And then if you click on Best Car Repair Shops link, then it'll take you to a list, and it'll ask you if you want mechanical or transmission or paint and body or diesel. And you pick what you want, and then it says what part of town are you in. You click, and bingo, all those shops are there. Here's my promise to you. Every single one of those shops has promised to let the Better Business Bureau make a determination on any customer complaints. If the Better Business Bureau tells a shop to pay the customer $500, let's say, or to perform a repair that's $500, and the shop refuses, I personally will either fix the car, the $500 repair, or I'll write the check for $500. And the third part of my promise to you is I kick the shop off the list. Three things. You better do what the BBB says, and there's a process that BBB goes through. Part of the process is the Auto Advisory Committee, and I helped create that back in the 80s. I'm very familiar with it, and it's a very fair process for both the consumer and the repair shop. So I'm asking them to let other people determine whether they truly should make a refund or not. And I'm proud to tell you that since 1988, I have never written a check.
2 minutes.
Now, I've kicked two shops off for being stupid, but I've never written a check.
Jerry is your next caller.
And that's the reason. Jerry, how are you today? What can we do for you?
Hey, Mark, how are we today?
Thank you. Thank you.
Good. I got two questions if you got the time.
Give me one.
Okay, first one is, on checking the oil, you say never add oil until it hits the add mark. Why is that?
Because it's a quart low at that point. So if it's halfway between the add and the full and you add a quart, you've just overfilled it by a quart. So every dipstick out there in the world, the add mark is 1 quart low and the full mark is full. So I don't want you to add if the oil's between there, because the tendency is to put a full quart in. And I don't want to contaminate the catalytic converter when you start consuming oil because your crankshaft's too full.
Oh, okay. So you're concerned with overfilling oil. Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Then the second question is on tire pressure.
Okay.
My pickup, the max pressure on the tire says 51. The door sticker says 40. My wife's car uses the same size tire, but her door sticker says 35. So I'm thinking, at what point does this tire get too darn low?
Okay. I'm going to answer your question on the other side of the break. I'm going to put you on hold, so if you'll stay right there. But I have an answer for you on all three of those parts. And why is 32, why is it 40, and why is it 51? I'm a tire expert, and so I testify in courtrooms about the wear and the maintenance and analyzing the information on the side of the tire, the application of tires, a tire wear issue, a rotation issue, all that kind of stuff. And I'm real familiar with the logistics on the side of the tire. So I'm going to give you the very best advice I can, but what I'm going to end up telling you is really all three of those are acceptable. And then at the end of the day, we'll talk about your truck and your wife's car. So we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Jerry, you stay there, Norm, real quick, and let me just take care of some business here. One of the best diagnosticians I've ever met in my life, it works at Larry Harker's Auto, and he's the boss there with his wife, Ellen. They do good work, and they've been around since 1967. But Bob and Ellen, together, run Larry Harker's Auto. And Bob is one of those guys that you can wave the red flag in front of him and say stuff like, I've had this to 10 shops and no one can fix it. And his eyes will light up and he'll say, just leave it here. Then you're going to say, well, what's the diagnostic process? And he says, to start with, it's this much money. But I should be able to find it in that. The worst case scenario is this, and I will find it there. So he's the kind of guy, and he looks you in the eye and he says, hey, if I don't fix it, I'll give you your money back. Because he fixes it. So if you live anywhere, 38th Avenue and Indian School, or if you're looking for a great guy to do diagnostic work, let's say if you open up your door, the radio station changes. Bob can figure that out. Bob probably already fixed it. And it doesn't really make any difference what kind of car, truck you have and what kind of problem you have. And he's also not afraid to say, I'm not the best guy for this job. But as far as diagnosing, Bob is really good. 38th Avenue and Indian School, it's called Larry Harker's Auto. Jerry, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take the two extremes. Your truck has a tire on it that has a maximum inflation of 51, and your wife's car on the tag says 35 PSI. Every vehicle has a dry weight and a fully loaded weight. Your wife's car weighs 3,500 pounds. It holds four people. So the effective maximum load is four butts and a couple of things, of golf clubs in the back. So the average weight is 150, that's 300 in the front, 300 in the back, that's 600 with 200 pounds of luggage, so 8 on top of 3,500 is 4,300. Maximum load of that car is 4,300. So the tire manufacturers along with the cars say, in order for this tire to handle this maximum load, I need 35 PSI in it. Now, at 35 PSI on a 51 max tire, on the side it says 51 maximum inflation, it's going to be a nice soft ride. But if they hit a pothole doing 60 miles an hour, the tire's going to collapse and the wheel's going to cut the tire, so they're going to have a blowout. And they're not going to get the very best fuel economy because it's like riding a bicycle with tires half flat. But it's going to give you a nice ride. So the tire's at 51, so your truck has a 40 on the tag with the 51 max written on the tire. Here's what I do. I don't care what you do. Here's what I do. I run everything I own on the maximum inflation, and here's why. Number one, if I kiss a curb, and it's really not me, it's my wife and my daughters. So if they kiss a curb, my chances of having a cut sidewall on that tire reduce to virtually nothing if that tire's kind of hard. Now, does it ride better than the 35? No, but who cares? But let me ask you this. Do you remember when you were a child and you rode your bicycle to the gas station with two flat tires? It took a lot of effort. When you got air, when you rode your bicycle back home, it was like a brand new bicycle. Well, your car's the same way. Your car's going to get better fuel economy with tires that are at the maximum inflation, but the car makers want you to run it at 35 because you have a fine ride. So, and the temperature of a tire at 35 pounds is higher than the temperature of that same tire with maximum inflation of 51 pounds. The temperature is far lower at 51 than it is at 35. And heat is the tire's worst enemy.
2 minutes.
That's your reasons. So you've got, this is the maximum on the sticker. This is what you should have to appropriately carry the weight that this car is designed. But the tire has a maximum inflation. And I suggest to you that you run the maximum inflation on the vehicles and no one's going to care.
Okay, I understand that.
All right.
What I was wondering was, a few years back they had all those vehicles that they were claiming that the tires were blowing because they were running the tires at too low of pressure. I think they were Ford with the Explorers.
Yeah, the Firestone Fiasco.
Okay, yes. That's what I was thinking. I mean, at what point did the tire pressure get too low?
Well, if you remember, 1990, the Ford Explorer came out. It was the first sport utility vehicle of any substantial nature. Well, the sport utility vehicle is halfway between a truck and a car. That's what SUV means. So when the Ford came out with it, they softened the tires to 24 pounds.
1 minute.
And they wanted it to ride like a car but look like a truck. Well, Firestone should have probably been in that secret because the tags were saying that Ford was at 24 and 26 pounds. And then sometimes car dealerships, this happens usually in Canada, I might add, so I don't offend anybody here, but car dealers elsewhere will soften a car up so the car rides nicer when you sell it. Then when you buy it, they'll add 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 pounds. However, part of the Firestone issue was the tire, but they shared in the responsibility. Ford was just as much at fault as Firestone was, but there's been bigger recalls than that Firestone tire, and the Goodyear G159 is one of them. So in that Firestone issue, which started in 1990 when they came out with the Explorer, that was 50-50. That was half of Firestone's issue, and that was half of Ford's issue. All righty. Good luck to you, Jerry. Thank you very much. That was a good conversation for me. Norm. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here talking about car and car repair problems. Let me start real quick by doing some business. Automatic Transmission Exchange is a great place. Automatic Transmission Exchange, you've driven by it probably a couple hundred times. 40th Street in Washington. Phil's been in business since 1968. Automatic Transmission Exchange is capable of all kinds of repairs, from a bad connection to a complete overhaul. The best thing about Phil is he's not interested in overhauling every transmission that comes in, and he'll tell you that about a third of the problems that are brought into his shop have nothing to do with the transmission. So oftentimes it's a drivability problem, it's a fuel delivery problem, or it's something that's making the transmission look stupid. So if you're in the Phoenix area, especially if you're in the South Phoenix area, but really anywhere in the Phoenix area, may I suggest Automatic Transmission Exchange on 40th Street in Washington is the place that you should stop by. Let's go to Norm. Norm, we started with you, and I'm sorry we set you aside, but let's start over.
Yeah, no problem, Mark. What we have is my son's got a 97 Jeep XJ with a 4-liter in it. And this thing's been driving fine, no problems. And then the other day, all of a sudden, he had a rough idle, and it didn't want to. It would stall occasionally. This happened intermittently. Then he went ahead and changed the IAC and cleaned that out. That didn't make any difference. He mentions now that all of a sudden the gas mileage got really bad. Then this morning he fired it up, and this is the first time I actually got to see it do it. And it started up fine, ran for a minute, then the idle went really rough, and you could smell that this thing went way rich. We had thought it was going lean maybe, but anyhow, it smelled like it was going super rich and then died and then started it up again, and then I let him drive my Jeep to work. So
okay.
Anyhow, that's where we're at. Wondering where you think we might go next.
Well, you've done really good, but the most important thing you told me was the bad idle, and it smells like it's running rich. So it's going to have either a mass airflow sensor or a MAP sensor, and both of those are load sensors. So they tell the engine where the throttle's at and whether the nose of the car is going uphill or downhill. So obviously, as you start to go to Flagstaff, your foot's a little deeper in the throttle, and we're loading the car up. So the mass airflow sensor and the MAP sensor tell the computer, give us a little bit more fuel. Well, the rough idle and the black smoke and the smell of fuel says rich, 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 rich. Well, rich causes a misfire because we're flooding the cylinders and flooding the spark plugs. And if you pull the spark plugs out right now, a couple of them, they're probably black with soot. So we need to fix the rich condition. We need to figure out where the extra fuel is coming. Is there an injector that's wide open? Is the computer got one injector wide open? Is the fuel pressure regulator, instead of this being a dam and opening and closing to keep the fuel pressure stable, is this thing jammed shut, which causes the fuel to go from 40 psi to 80? So now when the injector opens and closes like this, psst, psst, that we're only supposed to get a psst worth of fuel, but at 80 pounds it goes psst, and we get a whole bunch more fuel. So these are all the things that need to be done. He's already spent more for that air control motor than most shops would have diagnosed this for you. We're going to plug in the scanner, and we all know what the numbers mean. You're not going to know if you get a scanner, and neither is the three-whiskered kid at AutoZone, if he looks at the mass airflow sensor and he sees the number 8 or he sees the number 30, he's not going to know what the good number is. If he looks at the oxygen sensor and he sees a 0.9 as opposed to a 0.1, he's not going to know what that means. So as you go through this, a seasoned technician knows what the numbers are supposed to be. If the idle air control or the MAP sensor is running really, really rich, it thinks you're climbing a hill. Well, look here, the vacuum port has come apart. Or look here, the vacuum port is plugged with carbon. Or the vacuum hose is collapsed inside. So when I tee this line to the MAP sensor, then I'm looking at engine vacuum and it should be 1.8 and it's 0. Well, 0 means give me fuel. So how about I just replace this little vacuum line and boom, we're done. So I don't know what it is, but I can tell you it's nothing serious. Now, after you get it fixed, you need to change the oil and filter because the fuel by this time has contaminated your oil, so it's not nothing you want to continue. I think you're going to spend $75 to $125 to have this properly diagnosed. I think it's perfectly acceptable for you to look the shop owner in the eye or the technician or the service writer and say, I'm going to want you to diagnose this and guarantee your diagnosis, but I'm thinking I might want to fix it myself. Puts a little additional pressure on the technician because he knows that you're going to go fix it and hopefully the problem will be gone. But if he's guessing with your money, you're going to know it after you buy the part and it doesn't fix it. So those are your options. But I think right now you're the only other option you have is continue to guess, and I think that's a bad idea. Okay?
Okay. What places do you recommend around 59th Avenue and Bell Road?
59th Avenue, I got Kelly Clark at 40th. No, he's 40th Street and Bell Road. Well, how about, hold on a minute here.
That Thunderbird Auto sounds like it's kind of close.
That Thunderbird Auto just sold, and it's my fault that commercial played because he's no longer part of our best car repair shops list, not because he did anything wrong, but he doesn't have 5 years of experience at that shop. So
okay.
I did not remove him because he did anything wrong. He could very well be one of the best guys out there, but he's not on my list, so I can't recommend him. There is a Thunderbird Auto that's closer in town that you can go to. And it's owned by Tom, who sold his shop in Surprise. So look for two different Thunderbird Autos. You also have Mike's Auto Tech at 67th Avenue in Northern. I know he can fix that. I know Tom at the I-17 21st Avenue in Deer Valley. I know he can fix that. And then that's about it. That's all I've got on the west side is up in the northwest side. those guys there could fix that. You might have to drive a little bit, but like I said,
that's cool.
Action is 21st Avenue. It's Deer Valley and I-17 northwest corner, and Mike's Auto Tech, 67th Avenue south of Northern. He can fix that too.
Okay, great.
Alrighty.
Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Norm. Good luck to you and your son. Don, you're up next. How can I help you?
I have a dilemma.
Okay, well, if you can spell that, then I'm willing to help you. Go ahead. D.
Yeah. I got a 98 Vonneville in my backyard. We changed the upper side of the motor, if you know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
It goes bad. So we started it up, and the oil went back to beige color. And I'm going, okay, what do we do now? I haven't started it or anything since then. So my wife wants the car out of the backyard, and I was going, wonder if Mark has a tech down there that would like to spend a little money on a car and maybe resell it or donate it or something, because it's still a good, viable vehicle.
Well, let me ask you, did you do the heads or the intake?
No, just the upper intake.
Okay. Well, the easy part to do is that's kind of easy diagnosis. It's what we do is we just take the top of the intake off, not the bottom, but the top, or we go in through the throttle blades, and we drop a camera in there, and we just kind of pressure test the cooling system and look to see if the water is coming in through the intake, which means you screwed up the gasket. Another way to do it is pull the spark plugs out of it, pressure test it, and if the water's coming out of one of the cylinders, then that means the head gaskets are bad. So the real question you have here is this. Is the water coming from the intake gasket I just replaced, or is it coming from a bad cylinder, a head gasket in the bad cylinder?
Yeah.
That's your question. How many miles are on it?
192. We did the whole top side at 138.
Okay, you did gasket. Heads on it and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah,
okay.
We pulled the heads. The heads were clean. I mean, you know me. I'm notorious on oil changes. So
okay. And on a 1 to 10 scale, what's the physical condition of the outside and the inside of the car?
It's a good car still.
Okay.
Never been wrecked.
Okay. Well, do a KBB.com on it and just do a private party sale. And look to see what it's worth. If it's worth $1,500 based on the mileage, then it doesn't make a lot of sense to spend a whole bunch of money fixing that thing. But
yeah.
I've got some sealer that I can guarantee you will fix the head gasket issue. So, I mean, I guarantee it. We use it, and we have had tremendous success with it. We've got a couple cars that have been running on this sealer for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, so I'll have it to does, stop by and see
it does, but the sealer does not work on the intake gasket.
Right.
It has to have heat, which is the cylinder. So in your particular case, you're far better off. If it's the upper intake, then just reset the intake. And
buy another gasket.
Well, when you pulled the intake off, was there a lot of corrosion around the square inlets of the intake on both sides?
No, I still got the old one. I'd have to go look at it. So.
Okay. Oh, did you put a new intake on it?
No, I put a new plenum on it.
Okay. All right.
But I haven't changed the oil yet. And so maybe that's my first thing to do is change the oil.
I agree with you. You should do that.
And go from there.
And get a pressure tester. You know, fill it up with water, not coolant. Stick it on pressure for 10 minutes.
I got water in it now.
Okay, then just pressure test and walk away. Because if you don't have a leak after sitting there, then the next thing is get it running and now get it warmed up with the pressure tester still on it. Then shut the key off and watch the pressure because it may have a leak when it's hot, but not when it's cold. So
now
you do that.
We've been there.
Okay.
We've been there. Okay.
All right. Well, good luck
to you.
All right.
All right. We'll see
you. You betcha.
Okay.
Thank you. All righty. Let me tell you about Action Auto Repair. We just talked about him. Tom is up on Deer Valley and I-17 Northwest Corner. I've known Tom since probably 70s, 75, 76, up to 79. He worked for a company that sold those big box engine analyzers. Remember in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, we used to say, can you put it on the scope? Well, he sold those, and he could make his dance. I mean, he could make that thing do miracles on cars. The problem is I didn't like his brand, so I bought the other brand, but we still maintained our friendship. And he doesn't hold against me, and of course, I don't. That's not anything that I'm going to lose a friend over, but he knows what he's doing. He knows a lot about cars. He's an honest as the day is long. And not too long ago, he had an issue with a customer that I got involved in with him. And actually, the customer had made an offer, and Tom upped the offer. And I thought that was unusual because the customer basically said, I'd be happy with this. And Tom says, I'll make you extra happy. Now, I don't think that he's going to do that every single time, but I can tell you this much. Action Auto knows what they're doing. They're going to treat you fairly, and they've been around a long time. Again, on the northwest corner of I-17 and Deer Valley. Any other callers?
Nope. Lines are open.
All righty. We got lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Let me look on my desk here and see what I've got, because I've usually got something. Oh, I know what it was. There was a nifty article in the paper not too long ago, and it's been spread around the Internet about the new electric cars. And it's important to know that the hybrid cars have a gasoline engine that typically is very small, and it's typically not a car that's going to be used in a drag race in any way, shape, or form. Then you have a big, huge battery in the car, and the gasoline along with the battery, they say that sometimes the battery will last you between 30 and sometimes 100 miles, although no one admits that they ever got 100 miles. But I'm going to tell you it's 30, 50, 60 miles on the electric portion of the car, and then the gasoline will take you to the rest of the way to Tucson. So you've got a range of sometimes between 125 and 200 miles on one of those hybrid cars. But now people are starting to come out of the woodwork that are electrical engineers that say this. The cost per mile on these cars can easily exceed 73 cents a mile. They did an analysis of the cost for electricity to charge the hybrid is approximately this much per kilowatt hour. So you add that with the gasoline for the entire amount of miles it got, it's 74 cents a mile. Compare this to a similar car with a gasoline engine that only gets 32 miles to the gallon, and 319 per gallon divided by 32 is 10 cents a mile. So that, I'm telling you that that's the truth. That the fact of the matter is these hybrids, while you may feel green, wait till you pay for a battery. And wait till you have a chance to drive one of those to Flagstaff. Wait till you have to go up from Rye to Payson. You'll understand why if you feel like you have a two-cylinder lawnmower engine underneath the hood of that car. But nevertheless, if that's your thing, fine with me. For the rest of you thinking about a hybrid, go drive them first. That's an important part of this entire thing. And then also factor in the electrical consumption the car's going to get. And some of these cars take 8, 10 hours to plug in and charge. So Mark at MarkSalem.com. That's my email address. Mark at MarkSalem.com. I'll see you next Saturday right here on KKNT.